We love to do shows here on Progressive Radio Network for many reasons. First of all, to be in the company of others that bring you the latest information in terms of the many aspects of holistic medicine and leading edge and proprietary new thoughts that can actually lead the planet in a positive direction. And certainly right now, that's more important than ever. So what we're going to do is continue today by bringing aboard our guest. Our guest is Felicia Stoller. She is an RD, that's a registered dietitian, and she also has an MS, an RDN, an FACSM, an FAND. She can tell us what all that is about. And she has been referred to as America's health and fitness expert. She's a registered clinical nutritionist, exercise physiologist, and consultant in disease prevention, wellness, and healthy living. Felicia earned her Master of Science degree in Applied Physiology and Nutrition from Columbia University and her doctorate in clinical nutrition from one of my alma maters, along with Cornell University, Rutgers School of Health Professions. She completed her residency at Rutgers as part of the University Athletics and ABC News Medical Unit. She also has extensive media experience and hosted the second season of TLC's groundbreaking series, Honey, We're Killing the Kids, which targeted unhealthy lifestyles of families across the country in an effort to motivate them to make positive changes. She is the author of the American College of Sport Medicine's current comment on childhood obesity and has written several books, including one we'll be focusing on today, Living Skinny in Fat Genes. So I'd like to welcome you to the show. Thank you for joining us today, Felicia.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
Now, why don't we go back in time a little bit and talk about what led you to your interest in becoming a registered dietitian?
Well, you know, it's funny that you should say this because people laugh at me when I tell them that this is my third career, but it's true. I got out of college thinking I wanted to be a lawyer. I worked at a big Wall Street law firm. And after I was there, I realized, you know, after a few years that nobody there really seemed to love their job. So I started working at ABC News, doing licensing for the network news division. I loved it. I'm an info junkie. I loved the fast pace of it. And I contemplated getting a master's in journalism. And the woman who hires most of the producers there and the on-air talent said, you know, a master's in journalism is a dime a dozen. Why don't you go to school for something you're passionate about and see if you can't work it back into media? And that's exactly what I did. So I had actually gone to somebody with similar credentials to myself, just minus the doctorate, and she changed my life because my lifestyle of living in New York, working crazy hours, going out to all hours, not working out as much as I had before, and I like to tell, you know, remind people that there were times when gyms were not open 24 hours a day and they had very fixed hours and it was not always conducive to my corporate lifestyle to be able to do that. So, you know, this woman changed my life and I was getting bad advice from the trainer at the gym and I was reading all the diets in the magazines and I wasn't getting the results that I wanted and I had found that in my 20s, of, you know, while living in New York, that I had put on a good 20-plus pounds. And I, you know, seemingly thought I was doing all the right things, following all different kinds of diets, working out twice a day, and I just couldn't lose the weight. And it was amazing how this woman changed my life, and I must have sent her at least a dozen referrals. And I never gained the weight back after I worked with her. And then I went back to school and decided to do this for myself. And what a great privilege and pleasure it is to be able to have a career where I get to help people, you know, make healthier changes and live healthier lives.
Wow, that's a great story. And, you know, one of the classes that I teach is called Career Paths in Natural Healthcare for people who do have, you know, either they're young and they don't have a big background or they're older and they definitely have a big background, but they're looking for a change. And one way to incorporate that change, I always do talk about becoming an RD, which is as you are.
Well, I'm so glad to hear that because, you know, the challenge with nutrition is that anyone can call themselves a nutritionist. But, you know, I've only worked at top companies in my life. I've only gone to excellent schools. So I've never thought about ever shortchanging my education and training. And while I believe other people, you know, for various reasons feel that they can't or don't want to do that, you know, my challenge is you do untoward harm to people by not getting the right education and training. And, you know, I worked at ABC News full-time and went to school full-time at night to do all those chemistry classes and science prereqs for grad school that I didn't take as an undergraduate, which was totally cool. When I was doing my residency for my doctorate, I had just gotten divorced, and I had to get on a plane every week and leave my kids, who were little, with a nanny, you know, to go travel and finish up my schooling for a month, you know, out of town. And, you know, there are just certain things you have to do and sacrifices you have to make, but it makes you a better clinician, and it makes you better at what you do, and I feel comfortable and confident that I'm, you know, not going to harm anybody with the information that I give out.
Yes,
which is
I
really
totally
important.
Agree.
I know, you know, you think it's
totally
crazy,
agree.
Like, what's going to happen?
Someone
you're going to tell someone to eat fruits and vegetables,
diet.
You're not going to harm them, but you can.
Right. And getting really, truly an RD degree, I really think, is the way to go. Here's the challenge for many people who I have spoken to, although we have a good answer for them also. There's a concept about registered dietitians that their education and training and what they very often do for a living is really about this old concept of like canned peas and meatloaf. You know,
right. Well, because people think, I'll tell you what it is. One of the professors that I had at Columbia said, I feel really bad for you. And we're predominantly female business, by the way. We must be like 95% female. So she said, I feel really bad for you girls because everyone thinks you're the ladies that work in the hospital doing food service with the hairnets, you know. And most of my colleagues and peers are people that work outside of institutions like that, outside of healthcare settings. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, as a matter of fact, ironically, when I reflect back on my life and my experience, I was a candy striper, you know, when I was 13 years old at the local community hospital for about 4 years. And the first place I worked was in the cafeteria, you know, in food service, you know, bringing trays to people. And, you know, there's an important part of that, and we can all make fun of it, but the profession is more than that. There are people that work in policy, that work for agencies. They work for not-for-profits. They work in PR and communications. They work in private practice. They work in corporate wellness settings. There are a lot of supermarkets have dietitians, you know, Wegmans and ShopRite, and across the country there are food, you know, chains that recognize the value of having registered dietitians there to help consumers make better food choices. That's what
and
we do. I make a living telling people what to eat.
Beyond that, people who do want to work within a hospital setting, I find it extremely exciting because we've had many people who are RDs but belong to the holistic faction of the American Dietetic Association, which is really becoming stronger and stronger. And that really excites me when they are in a hospital setting where, and I have many people who have been on this show, in fact, within the institutions even, have been able to change even hospital food to where they get out the chemicals and they move the entire hospital because they're in a position to really healthy food choices. They've gotten the McDonald's out of the door when you walk in. I mean, they've really made some powerful statements towards health and nutrition.
Well, of course, if you think about it, people are there because they're sick and their immune systems or their bodies need nourishment in order to heal properly. So you need to make sure that you have, you know, good foods that taste good, right? Because taste is very important, because if something doesn't taste good, people aren't going to eat it. And there's a lot to be said for food waste, too, whether it be in a hospital, whether it be in a school setting, you know, or in people's homes. You know, there's a lot of food waste that goes on, and there's plenty of hungry people on this planet. So I'm always very conscientious and aware of that. But food is nourishment. Food is medicine. It's the first line of defense for our bodies. And, you know, Hippocrates said, let food be thy medicine.
And that is all excellent information, and thank you for sharing it and for putting all that energy into putting yourself in a position of power, which actually makes your message resonate so much more effectively. So, yeah, although it was hard, you know, I did that too. I was a single mother. I have all kinds of degrees and PhDs that I got. Well, the kids were here, and I was a single parent taking care of them. So there are challenges, but it's so worth it once you finish, because now you can tell so many people the truth.
Right.
Now, what about
you forget, too? You're a great role model for your children when you do that.
That's true, absolutely, because it's we can do it. You know, we can do it. And that's why this wonderful book, which we will go into, Living Skinny in Fat Jeans, is really, really wonderful, because some people just go, and I'll give my husband as an example, for instance. He's Italian, and he, when he was young, everyone in his family was overweight, everyone. So when he was a teenager, he just figured, oh, well, that's because of my genes. And he suddenly came upon a book like yours, which talked about the fact that some people tend more to gain weight, but a lot of it has to do with your family's food choices, which tend to be inherited. And when he looked around himself, being Italian, it was mostly pasta and bread, of course, at every meal.
Right. Well, that's culturally what they had.
Only thin one in his whole family.
Plant-based foods are what a lot of people ate because they're sort of the staples and they're less expensive, right? And you could put calories in people's bodies, you know, very easily.
That's true. So what made you choose this title for your book, Living Skinny in Fat Jeans?
So I tell a really cute little story at the beginning of the book about very early in my career. I remember sitting in on a presentation, and somebody had a cartoon, because, you know, when we do PowerPoints, we love to have cartoons. I like to use humor when I'm teaching people or trying to make a point. And it was a guy sitting across from the doctor. He said, "But, Doc, fat genes run in my family." And the doctor says, "No, nobody in your family runs." So, you know, I think about the fact that people always want to blame their genes, and they want to, you know, and then we hear this whole thing about, like, women and skinny genes and fat, you know, like, nobody wants to admit they have fat genes, but everyone talks about skinny genes. There are, you know, you could go to The Gap or Banana Republic, or, you know, even when my kids were little, you know, there'd be, like, the skinny genes, you know, or as my sister would say, you know, the slim fits, right, versus the huskies when I was a kid. So I just sort of wanted to play with that whole notion of, you know, skinny genes and, you know, and genetic genes. And, you know, I come from a family of fat people, and I realized, especially early in my career, that a lot of that's because of the food choices that they make. It's not, you know, I'm not doomed to be overweight because everybody else in my family is, because I don't make the same food choices that they do. And I see it even now. I've been in this field for, let's see, my daughter is 18 and a half years old. I've been in this field for almost, you know, that long. And, you know, I still look at my family at holidays, and I'm not judging, but I observe, you know, why people watch. I live in New Jersey. I go to the diners, and I watch how people eat. And unfortunately, I see a lot of morbidly obese people that look like they eat like morbidly obese people do. You know,
and if you look at what's on their plate, it's usually true. I mean, one thing I found very upsetting, although we're not going to go into specific names, but let's just say, since it was the political season in the recent past, we'll leave it at that. We see a lot in terms of the politicians who are running, what they're eating and how they look.
Right.
And I
especially being from New Jersey, I need not talk about our governor here, but, you know, this is a man who had bariatric surgery and still looks pretty morbidly obese. And it's not about looks. It really comes down to health. That's what I really, it's always about health and what we do now. And I know that there are some people that talk about being fat and fit, but at the end of the day, being overweight and being obese is a health problem. And if it's not a problem now, it will be later for most people. And, you know, a lot of diseases are preventable. You know, the top causes of death, heart disease is still number one, and diabetes is now up on that list, where maybe 20 years ago diabetes was not on that list. And I would say at least 6 out of 10 of the leading causes of death are attributed to, you know, lifestyle behaviors.
Well, your book is just a wonderful thing for people to have, and I love the chapter titles, because you actually do. It's certainly woman-focused, we'll say that.
Right.
You know, I guess there's men also interested in what jeans they wear and all, but anyway. You
right,
know,
I was trying to sort of make a play on women and their different jeans and their different thoughts on it. And, yeah, but, you know, it really it's about, and I like to just sort of, you know, my new sort of mantra has been that the healthy choice is the easy choice. We just have to all make it, that's all.
Yeah, and it is becoming easier, I would say, since I've been doing this lifestyle since 1964, and that's quite a long time, many, many decades. I would say at this point in time, I can walk down the street only in major city centers, and there's choice after choice of really natural foods, which is kind
right.
of new.
Right. Well, and even if somebody has to eat at a fast food restaurant, I was traveling last week, and there was a little bit of a wait at the hotel I was at for lunch, and I just wanted something really quick because I had some work I needed to get done. And there was a Chick-fil-A right next door, so I walked over there, and they have the coolest salad I've ever seen at a quick-serve restaurant. It was a kale salad with quinoa and cranberries, and I think it had pecan nuts in it. And you could get chicken on it or not. And I was like, wow, who knew, right? Like, you get this, you know, got the dressing on the side. It had about 300 calories with the chicken on it. I got some, you know, grilled chicken on top. And, you know, I didn't have to have the fried chicken. I didn't have to have the French fries. It smelled very good and tempting. But, you know, even at quick serve restaurants, there are better for you food choices. A lot of places have fruit. You know, you could always have water. You can always have club soda. You can always get that too.
Right. It's actually easier and easier, though, because as you walk, even, let's say, the airport, right here at JFK Airport, and I fly out of it just about every week, in the JetBlue terminal, they have amazing food. They'll have, like, steamed broccoli with nothing on it. They'll have
right.
steamed sprouts. So this didn't used to exist, you know. Like I said, I've been doing this since 1964. It was much more challenging. But another
yeah.
thing that I do every day and all the time is I take my food with me. I don't leave the house without a grab-and-go snack of healthy items. So you're not forced to run in to get pizza or soda.
Right. Right. I agree with you, and I do that very often. I'm very lucky, though. You know, when I'm traveling, it's never an issue. I know sometimes people would say, oh, when you travel, it's very hard. There are a lot of people that for work have to travel, but I say that there's lots of great options, even at rest stops, you know, along the way, along highways, they have much better food choices. You know, I know some people still have to go pick their kids up at college, or people are driving, you know, to visit families for the holidays, and they, you know, need to make a little pit stop. So I just think it's important to know that, you know, it's not about making excuses. But, yes, you can bring a lot of your own foods with you. And I have lots of different bags I use for different things, whether it be my bag that I keep my stuff in when I'm teaching or when I travel. I've got a backpack that I throw my laptop in that's lightweight. And there's always food in there. I always keep snacks in there just in case. So that I do have some healthy options to, you know, bite into while I'm on the road, so whether it be dried fruit. I have a lot of dried fruit. I carry nuts. I carry dried beans, like the snack kind. And I also have, you know, some bars in there as well, some, you know, healthier, better-for-you bar choices.
Right, and
not
a good way
bars,
to
like,
on
you know.
Those, really carefully read the label, because bars can be very, very tricky. They might say healthy and protein and all that, and when you read them, some of them are loaded with really horrible things, but some are excellent. So you just
right.
have to be a label reader to choose the best ones.
That's right.
And, like
and
you
I
say
feel
in
like
your
the
book,
ingredients have gotten smaller on those labels. I need those magnifiers now to read the food labels.
You're not kidding. I actually tell a lot of my patients to bring magnifiers with them, even to the health food store,
yes.
and see what is the first, even if it's organic, is the first item organic sugar?
Right.
So that
right.
you can make an educated decision about what you're going to eat. Now, in
Absolutely.
Your book, you do talk about so many things, and, of course, a big one is eating closer to the earth. What do you mean by that?
So that really means eating foods closer to the way they're found in nature without them having to be, you know, highly processed. So So, for example, you know, if you're going to have corn looking like corn, not looking like Cheetos, you know, like looking like corn puffs. Trying to, I mean, and I understand, like most people, if they're going to have things like pasta that, you know, that doesn't, or bread doesn't resemble the way it's grown in nature. But, you know, when people sort of make fun of different food groups or foods that are out there, you know, a potato is a potato. You dig it out of the ground, it looks like a potato. There's nothing wrong with eating potatoes. You know, there's nothing wrong with eating starchy carbohydrates. And so, you know, so eating more plant-based foods. I have been, as I said before, doing this for over 18 years, and what I found over the years, both from my private practice, from research I've done, from teaching and reviewing student food journals, is that most people do not eat enough plant-based foods, right? That's really a big problem with the American diet, is that we hear so much about protein. Protein energy malnutrition is not a problem in the United States, and what we're finding is that carbohydrate foods of all sorts have been demonized for so long that people aren't eating them. And cancer rates aren't high because people are eating so many fruits and vegetables. I can tell you that. Because all those wonderful antioxidant properties that are found in the pigments of the plants, you know, help to reduce our risk for cancer. So people just aren't eating enough of that stuff.
Well, I would also say that it is better to choose organic when possible, because there's certainly links to ingestion of massive amounts of pesticides and herbicides. And the Environmental Working Group has a wonderful little free advice, either online or as a booklet, which talks about the Dirty Dozen and those fruits and vegetables, which if you have a budgetary analysis and can't spend a little extra for organic, you can choose just to buy organic with those really high-risk items such as strawberries and peppers and things like that. That really
I totally hear you on that, and I appreciate that. I come from a place where I find so many people are food insecure and have challenges meeting their daily needs, that I want people to, you know, buy what they can afford first and foremost. And then the other thing too that is important is recognizing that you know, we want to support local agriculture, and that's something that was really drilled into my head when I was at Columbia, that we want to support local farmers and you know, looking at the carbon footprint. And there are many farmers in the greater New York area, New York, New Jersey, Long Island, up in Westchester even, and upstate New York, that can't afford to do organic certification because it's very expensive. And that doesn't mean that they're not growing food in a good manner and trying to reduce their pesticide use. So it's
totally agree with you,
Felicia.
That would be my first choice, is local, because you can often ask the farmer and they'll tell
right.
you. We don't right. spray, or we spray minimally and use the least aggressive kind of spray and only when we really need to, and we haven't sprayed for the last 8 weeks. You know, they'll be
right.
up front with you, and that
right.
is going to be your best choice and your most cost-effective choice. So
right.
that's widely available, not all year round, however, but
right.
certainly in Manhattan, they have great farmers markets right on the street.
Absolutely. So that's why I just get a little like, oh, wait, I just want to say that one thing about the organic, just because of that, because I do know that there are farmers that, and I'm friendly with a lot of the farmers here in New Jersey, that there are quite a few of them that do try to have best practices, even though they're not going for the full-on organic certification, just for various like financial reasons, because a lot of farmers are not rolling in the dough. They're not driving the expensive cars, living in the big houses. They're not that 1%, you know?
That's true. That's a wonderful advice. Well, we're going to take just a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And when we come back, we are going to continue our discussion with author of Living Skinny in Fat Genes, The Healthy Way to Lose Weight and Feel Great. Fantastic book, really laid out so that it's really easy to read. By the way, I appreciate the larger type. I don't even need my glasses to read this book. And you make it a really quick and easy program that anyone can use to really just feel more fit, the way you'd talk about it, the healthy way to lose weight and feel great. Dr. Felicia Stoller, RD, and we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll take a look at the soybean, its phytochemistry, and its role as a food and medicine.
It is exciting to see a resurgence in research by universities and food scientists on the role that foods play in disease prevention. Many of these institutions, such as the United Soybean Board, the American Soybean Farmers Association, and the National Cancer Institute, are busy developing designer foods, or superfoods, concentrating the essential nutrients and phytochemicals in soybeans and other foods that have potent medicinal effects. Commonly known foods which have soy in them include soy milk, a cheese-like substance called tofu, tempeh, a fermented soy protein, and tamari, a fermented soy sauce. The soybean is a rich source of many nutrients, including selenium, zinc, beta-carotene, vitamins A, C, and E, and 20 of the 22 amino acids. Soy also contains essential fatty acids.
Research on soy foods is vast and well known to health enthusiasts, although the general public and physicians in the United States may not be aware of this plethora of research. In Japan and China, however, this is not the case, as a voluminous number of scientific studies have been carried out in animals and humans. Chinese studies reveal that soy products can increase the ability, rate of activity, and number of white blood cells. Patients receiving chemotherapy and radiation can benefit from drinking soy milk, which in several studies demonstrated a protective effect on the liver and gastrointestinal system.
It is interesting to note that the British journal Lancet revealed that vegetarians and Asians who ingest high amounts of soy have the lowest rates of cancer. This is due to one of soy's constituents called genistein. This chemical is a phytoestrogen or plant estrogen, which can decrease and block the uptake of human estrogen and testosterone, as well as enhance its excretion. Like the drug tamoxifen, it competes with estrogen for uptake in the reproductive tissues. By doing so, hormone-dependent cancers like ovarian, breast, and prostate cancers may be prevented.
In conditions where there is a deficiency of hormones, such as osteoporosis and menopause, soy isoflavones, such as genistein, can weakly mimic estrogen and reduce the severity of these problems.
So, listeners, don't count out the versatile soybean. Make it a delicious and nutritious part of your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We are so happy to be a part of the Progressive Radio Network family since its inception, as a matter of fact. And we have many books available to you, including one that I wrote called Weight Loss, The Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, and also The Arthritis, The Natural Guide to Great Sex, Cycles of Life, Herbs for Women, Supplements for Pain, and Virility and Vitality. Those are some of the few of the newer books that we wrote just this year, as well as 12 others. So you can check out the website. And we also have many, many radio shows that you can listen to anytime as podcasts and on-ground classes where you can join us for a trip to the island of Jamaica to actually live with shamanic healers in an indigenous setting for 1 week a year and get 3 college credits for that, or our many local walks all over the country where we take you out to gather edible and medicinal wild plants and make your own medicine. So to find out more, you can go to naturalnurse.com. We present at the Open Center, at the Hippocrates Institute, and at centers all over the country. So we're happy to hear from you. Today, we are really pleased to have as our guest Felicia Stoller, Dr. Stoller, who is a registered dietitian and a nutritionist, exercise physiologist, and consultant in disease prevention, wellness, and healthful living. And you can find her at Felicia, that's F-E-L-I-C-I-A, Stoller, S-T-O-L-E-R.com. Today we're talking about her new book, Living Skinny in Fat Jeans. Really wonderful book. If you want some motivation as we approach the new year to make this year the one where you are living skinny. So thank you so much for joining us today, Felicia.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Now, let's talk about some of the factors. What do you mean by the fact that you can actually have something called brain weight? What do you mean by brain weight when the Western diet is dominated by processed meat, sugar, white flour? It raises your brain weight.
So brain weight meaning, we also refer to as the set point theory. So it's not the actual weight of your brain. It's not like if I took your brain out of your skull and put it on a scale. It's about how your brain actually controls your body weight. So your brain is sort of like mission control for all systems and all things going on in your body. And what happens is, like when I counsel patients, I always say to them, what is your highest adult body weight? What's your lowest adult body weight? And where do you tend to stay without much effort? Meaning, where does your body, like, you might lose weight, but then where do you go back to again? Because our body wants, like, it's very comfortable at a particular weight. So our brain is going to try to regulate our metabolism to stay at that, like, what it perceives as homeostasis. Unfortunately, the problem with that is that that comfort weight where your brain thinks your body should be may not be at a healthy weight for you. It could be at an obese weight. It could be at an overweight rate, you know, place. So you need to sort of, you know, how do you trick that? It's not doing one of these, you know, fad diets or a fast-acting diet where you're rapidly losing weight quickly, because what we know happens with most of those diets, and I'm sure you know this, I'm not going to tell you something you don't know, is that people who do these extreme weight loss, like on, you know, the TV shows, like The Biggest Loser, people who do those fast diets, they always gain the weight back because they haven't been able to really work with their brain to adjust to that decreasing body weight so that the brain gets comfortable. So there are a few strategies that I have for people to really get there. One is think about weight loss in terms of a long-term proposition, like any kind of endurance event. Most people did not become overweight quickly. You're not going to lose weight quickly and have that be effective and being, you know, weight loss is going to be, you know, weight loss you're going to be able to sustain and keep off for a long time. So, you know, cutting back on portion sizes is really important. Cutting back on certain ingredients, you know, like you were talking about processed foods, for example, and trying to cut back on that stuff. Something I think is really important while trying to go for smaller portions is using things like having some sort of tools in your toolbox to help you with that. So it might be using smaller forks, smaller plates, smaller spoons, smaller bowls, using things like what I really love, especially for the people, you know, we're coming into Thanksgiving, you know, for people that sort of love these, you know, a lot of the starchy foods this time of year because they make for great side dishes, is using something like a carb blocker. Phase two is an ingredient that's white kidney bean extract. And if you take that a half hour before your meal, it can help to block up to 65% of the starchy carbohydrates that you just ate from being absorbed.
Wait a minute. Let's take that a little slower. How can people find that? Does it have a certain name?
Oh, so it's phase two is an ingredient. Natrol is one of the companies. You can find that online. You can find that at GNC. You can find that, you know, they have it in a lot of stores. It's Natrol is one brand. I'll pull up the other brand for you as well so I can
Well, basically what you're looking for. Label, that's really useful. So it helps because it decreases the storage of the fat.
Right. So what it does is it helps to inhibit the absorption. That's what it does. So that you're eating the food and it can't get absorbed through the lining of your small intestine. So you're basically doing a lot of work to basically, you know, chew your food and move it through your body, and it's not necessarily getting absorbed. So it's a GNC. Is one brand, but there's other brands if you go to phase2info.com. There's a lot of different brands that might look familiar to people. I know in New York there's Invite Health. They have phase two an ingredient as well, Life Extension. There's a lot of different brands that make it. Vitamin Shop has it. Now is also a company. They've got like a bright orange label with like a little, it looks like a little sun setting or sun rising. So basically what that is it's white kidney bean extract. Think about it. Like white kidney beans can actually help you to inhibit absorption of other foods.
Yeah. Now,
so
what about
people,
if people
that
just
overeat
eat
that
white
stuff,
kidney
it's
beans?
It's really
as
wonderful,
part of it.
And research shows that people that take that can lose up help. It helps to lose up to 2 pounds a week for people in clinical research trials.
Wow, that's pretty. That's very informative, and that's something that, of course, with choosing more fruits and vegetables and exercising. I mean, I know you're an exercise physiologist.
Right. Well, right. I mean, I think there's so many great reasons to exercise, and anything you can do that's movement counts. You know, I know some people think you have to be at the gym, you have to be perspiring. Any movement that you do that you're up and moving about, right? Even people that are, you know, stuck in a chair can figure out a way to, you know, get some movement in on a regular basis. As a matter of fact, my doctoral research was in worksite wellness, and I used to say to people, if you just, you know, in your workplace, just took a 5-minute walk every hour that you're at work for a typical 8-hour day, you could get an extra 40 minutes of physical activity in.
Yeah, and I actually have a lot of my clients set an alarm, and they do a 50-minute work hour. And then that last 10 minutes, you can still be working, but you know what? Take a memo to your colleague across the room or downstairs. Go downstairs and see what's going on in the warehouse. I mean, there are ways to walk around the building and still be working. And, of course, what
and
do you think
walking,
of new desks that they're promoting where the desk
thing.
Goes up
and
down so you
patients.
Can work while you stand?
Yes, I've done that with patients when the weather is nice. We go to local parks and we actually do walking sessions so that we're talking instead of just sitting across from each other in the four walls of my office.
That is a great suggestion. Now, why do you think that different groups of people in the United States have different weight issues? For instance, you talk about Latina women rank first as being the most overweight among women in the United States. I did not know that until I read your fat gene facts.
Yes. Well, I mean, look, what it comes down to is it's about, some of it is about cultural acceptance of weight. Some of it is about, you know, looking at food choices. And some of it could be based upon whether it be socioeconomic status or access or food choices, or it could be about access to recreation and safe places to, you know, do exercise or be outdoors and for kids to play. So it's not about judging in any way, shape, or form, but it's about recognizing that people are at risk. You know, so if you, a lot of cultures, food is a way that you celebrate. As a matter of fact, most cultures, food is a way that we all celebrate life and life passages and important things that happen in our lives. So it really comes down to what is it that you're doing with your food to celebrate, and you know, portion size acceptance. And, you know, I know that a typical Latin diet has a lot of rice and beans and starchy carbs and potatoes and corn, and those can all be good, but not in large quantities. That's the really important thing here. You know, most people's cultural diets, when you leave the United States and go back to country of origin, portion sizes are smaller, right? There wasn't as much protein or fatty protein. As one of my professors in graduate school who was from the Caribbean said, she came to America because protein is cheap here, and it really is. And the least expensive forms of protein are the ones that tend to be the least healthiest because they have the greatest amount of fat with them. So we have to really be careful about that.
So you feel that it's mostly dietary choice that really points out these differences versus genetic differences?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to be because if you look at country of origin, those diseases were not there. It's really when people acculturate and they come to the United States that we see a lot of these changes. So, you know, if you look at a typical, you know, an African-American diet versus a diet in Africa, very different, right? If you look at, you know, and when you say Latino, is it Latin America Latin? Is it Spain Spanish, you know, of origin? Is it Puerto Rico? You know, in South America, you know, there are Latin America, you know, people do eat more plant-based diets, getting back to what we were talking about before. And they tend to be healthier. It's sort of when they come to the U.S. that, you know, everything gets supersized.
Oh, that was a great movie, wasn't it? You probably saw it. Precise Me? Yeah. Pretty striking. Now, what about gender? There seems to be a difference in terms of abdominal fat genes and their impact on women versus men.
So what we know is that women, because of estrogen, tends to store fat in the lower half of our bodies. So we think about, we call it like the pear versus the apple-shaped weight gain. And what happens is as women approach menopause, we see shifts in estrogen levels. And what happens is that instead of fat, extra fat being stored in the lower half of their body, women start to complain about having more belly fat around their stomach area. And also higher cortisol levels from stress also encourages the storage of fat in the abdominal region. What we know about belly fat is it puts us at greater risk for heart disease, greater risk for diabetes, and for hypertension. And there's something to be said for that fat that's closer to like the middle of our body being accessed for fuel, for extra energy. And so that's basically, you know, part of the problem that we have.
So basically, that's why we see more. I mean, I see lots of overweight men too. Is it really statistically true that women tend to be more overweight than men?
I think it's even. I think that there's plenty of overweight men. I think they carry it differently, but I see lots of men that have that, you know, that belly's hanging over. So I don't think it's just women, and I think it's both. You know, when you look at the data and the statistics on overweight and obesity, it's across the board. Women aren't necessarily, you know, statistically significantly more obese or overweight than men are.
Now, how is it that so many dieters gain back more weight than they started having when they began their dieting procedures?
Well, for a lot of people, the reason why they gain back a lot of weight is because what they did to get there is so extreme, instead of making small changes, which is what we were speaking about before. So if all of a sudden you're going to go on like a cabbage soup diet or do something really, you know, or some juicing diet, I see some of these juices and cleanses, and, you know, you can't do that your whole life. You can't be on an Atkins-style diet your whole life and, you know, think you're never going to eat a carbohydrate again. So, you know, what happens is that people take it off too quickly, and they're not doing something that's sustainable. Like we were talking before about, you know, a local agriculture and trying to be sustainable. It's about doing something that's sustainable in terms of an eating plan. You know, eating a very low-calorie diet to help lose weight is one thing, but you can't eat a very low-calorie diet the rest of your life because that can be very problematic and keep you very hungry, right? Especially
if it's deplete nutrients, so it's a balancing act. Well, we're going to take one more little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, so you can hear about some of the wonderful programming that is available to you all day, all night, and on the archives at prn.fm. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion with our wonderful guest today, Felicia Stoller, registered dietitian nutritionist, author of Living Skinny in Fat Genes. And we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
You're listening to PRN, number one for progressive minds.
Hi, I'm David Crowe, host of The Infectious Myth that airs at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time here on PRN. I use data to deconstruct the myths that infect the modern world. Myths within health and medicine, other areas of science, the justice system, society, media, censorship, and politics. Join me for challenging interviews and discussions. Listen live, as a podcast, or by dialing 701-719-0990. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is is Maria Heller, host of The Maria Heller Show, heard at Maria, M-E-R-I-A.net, 4 days a week. But every Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern, you get to hear one of the best shows of the week on The Maria Heller Show right here on PRN.FM. If you missed the show, they're archived right here on site at PRN. Support Real Truth in Media by tuning in and sharing the information you hear with anyone that'll listen. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
Hey, it's Paul Cavalcante, host of The Vinyl Experience, bringing you a new spin on a classic technology that just keeps getting bigger. Vinyl records are in, and The Vinyl Experience is the original radio show that tells their backstory, one revolution at a time. Join me Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern on PRN.FM and anytime in the archives.
Crackle, crackle. Pop, pop.
The Vinyl Experience on PRN.FM.
It's not liberal, it's not conservative, it's progressive, the truth that empowers, right here on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back once again to our show right here on Progressive Radio Network, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And today we have as our guest Dr. Felicia Stoller, and we're talking about her book, Living Skinny in Fat Jeans. And Dr. Stoller has been on many different media outlets, and we see a picture of her on her website with Dr. Oz, and also you were the host of TLC's Honey, We're Killing the Kids. Tell us about that show, Dr. Stoller.
Yeah, well, that was a really fun opportunity to travel the country and go into people's homes and see how they live and really do interventions on a real personal level for families and help them to make changes by changing their diet, getting their family more physically active, which was something that I wanted to make sure I was putting my personal fingerprint on, and you know, really just showing them and guiding them how their family could make changes. A lot of times, you know, kids had TVs in their room. I mean, now it's so different. Everyone's watching stuff on their devices instead of worrying about TVs. But we hear a lot, you know, with parents talking about trying to get our kids to unplug a little bit and not be so glued to their technology. I think that that's important, scheduling physical activity in for people and, you know, and learning how to cook better and eat better and make better food choices and have some good quality family time is really key. And not making excuses for why everybody's busy and, you know, families of two or three kids are running in opposite directions and you know, blaming, you know, and again, like excuse making, you know, just knowing that there are ways to, you know, make, again, better for you food and physical activity choices, even within busy families.
So you would go in and analyze what's going on, like with everybody yeah. rushing out with a bagel or a Pop-Tart or something like that in the morning
right.
and then eating maybe a school lunch and then coming home for dinner for fast
right.
food.
Right, and we would look at what the family was eating.
Like
we'd
that.
Literally, like, get them to jump a lot of the junk food out of their house and out of their pantries. Sometimes, a lot of times, the families needed some cooking lessons. They needed some recipes to work off of because, you know, they were eating a lot of grab and go. They were eating, you know, making not necessarily the better fast food choices when they would go out to eat. And, you know, kids sitting around doing mindless eating while they're in front of the television or in front of video games. And you know, some kids didn't do any physical activity, so we had to get them up and moving because they just weren't athletic. They weren't interested in doing other recreation, so they didn't really care to move. And it was really about, you know, changing families. And I can say that there's a handful of families, even though the show was, oh, my gosh, like, you know, almost 10 years ago. I stay in touch with a good number of those families because, you know, there's a real kindred opportunity.
Oh, that's wonderful.
There.
Could you tell us one case, you know, that you saw a positive change and that it either stuck or didn't? if you check
well,
back
I'd
with
say all the families when we work with them had positive changes, but you know it's easy to fall out of habit with that, and if it's not coming from the parents, or you know a lot of times parents want to let their kids make their own decisions, and I find with kids and teenagers what's really challenging for a lot of families is if a kid does, you know, parents will bring their teenager to see me, and I'm like, look, if your kid doesn't want to do this for themselves, they're not going to do it. I know as a parent, because I am one, you know, you want to do what's best for your children, and you try to guide and steer them, but if it doesn't really come from within, they're not going to do it.
And well, so, or they're not going to do it when they're home. I will tell you, I'm a parent, and my kids are a lot older. Like I said, I've been doing this since 64. So my kids were born 75 and 78. So they're, you know, parents themselves at this point. But what I did was, you know, I was in charge at home. The kids were not. And I was
right.
a single parent with limited money. So what was going to be there was healthy food.
Right.
And the choice was really eat that or starve. I mean, really, it
right.
wasn't about I'm going to bring in junk food. Now, on the other hand, I could not necessarily impose that other than creating healthy habits at home when they were out on the street. So I didn't try to, because then I felt like if they were at a friend's house and the friend's mother had Twinkies or something that we wouldn't have in the house, I didn't want them to eat it and then lie to me, because the lying was probably worse than the bad food. So
right.
it's a real balancing act.
Right. Right. Well, I remember the first time my daughter pointed to potato chips at a local farm stand, and I was like, what? You know, like, we don't have those in the house. She's like, well, they have them at camp, you know. You know, when I send my kids to school, I pack them a healthy lunch with better options, but when they were going to camp and, you know, there was food provided for them, it was like, oops. They learn what a potato chip was, but we're not quite that bad. But I did try when they were little to keep them as sheltered as possible.
Right, right. You have more control when they're little and as they get older. And then when my son left for college, he was like, I'm going to junk food it out, you know. I said, go
right.
for it. And you know
right.
what? By the next year, he asked me if he could live in an apartment instead of the dorm, mostly so that he could be in control of his food choices. And he went back to really healthy eating.
Well, you'll find this funny. My daughter's a freshman in college, and she, when I went down a few weeks ago, she's like, Mom, you have to make me something from home. I want something that's home cooked. I said, what? She said, green beans. I started laughing. I said, really? She said, yeah, you know, the string beans here, they're not the way you make them. I said, I just buy the bagged ones and stick them in the microwave. That's all we did.
Right, fresh instead of canned
fresh.
And overly
she just
seasoned
didn't like
and
that
having
they were overcooked
stuff.
Or maybe, you know, they were sitting there for a long time. But I've been to her cafeteria at school because, you know, I wanted to check it out. And I said, they have good choices. You have to stop going for, like, the kids stuff. You're going to be 19 years old. You know, you should be making grown up, you know, your food palate should be changing too. I hope you're going to make some better food choices and try new
right,
food.
And starting to put it back in her court. Which
right.
is really, really great. Now,
right.
how do you feel about water and drinking, you know, choosing which water to use? Do you think tap water is fine or what, problems with bottled water? I mean, I do know you talk about drink more water in your book,
yeah.
Living Skinny and Fat Jeans.
Yes, I think people need to drink more water. Our bodies are 70% water. You know, you think about giving your body a cleanse. The best thing you can do is drink water because it does help to, you know, sort of cleanse. Our body does a great job of cleansing itself. So if you help it to get anything bad out of your system, you know, drinking lots of water can facilitate that. So I think that that's really important. But, you know, tap water, I mean, I think tap water is great. But if you live in an area where it's compromised, and clearly you can't do that. Like I was just saying, my daughter is in college, and at her school, they have a problem with lead in the water, and they're giving out bottled water to the kids. So, you know, clearly that there are some issues with tap water in certain areas, and we've, you know, heard about that across the country when water supplies become compromised. So that can be, you know, quite problematic, and people do have to drink bottled water. I think the question is really one of whether you're drinking water or you're having, you know, sports drinks, or whether you're drinking these, you know, sort of flavored waters that have extra calories in them and you perceive that they're better because maybe they have some fancy ingredients in them. I think that's the issue. You can also get things like seltzer waters that are also, you know, if you like carbonated, that have some flavor, you know, flavor essence, but they're not really leading with calories. I think that's really important, you know, to be flushing our system with fluids throughout the day. What goes in must come out.
Yeah, it's true. And that's the thing, the flavored water, it might just say, you know, with delicious flavor, but if you read it, sometimes it's loaded with sugar as well.
And sometimes it's loaded with artificial flavorings and artificial sweeteners. And so, again, it's about picking, you know, making sort of better for you choices. And again, it's about, like, consuming, like, not just foods, but fluids closer to the way that they're found in nature.
Well, you do a great job of explaining all of these things. I love, you know, use the park and playground equipment, you know, even for adults, and walk around the office instead of sitting in the waiting room. That's a really great tip.
Yes, yes, yes. And, you know, you were talking about traveling at airports again. You know, could you go sit someplace or could you walk around the airport? I used to do one of those club memberships at the airport because I traveled a lot, so I could just go sit someplace. Now what I do is I walk around the airport. I use it as I'm going to be sitting on an airplane, and I'm also several times a month in the airport. So, you know, I walk around when I'm at the airport. I walk around. Maybe I'm not even shopping, but I just like to see what stores are there. I like to walk around even to the different markets that they have to see what kind of food choices are available so I can talk to people about making better food choices when they're traveling. So, again, using opportunities to get up and move are really, really, really key and important.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest today. And Felicia Stoller, Dr. Felicia Stoller, registered dietitian, Living Skinny and Fat Genes. What's the best way for people to contact you?
I'm on every single social media outlet, just as myself, Felicia Stoller on Facebook. It's Felicia D. Stoller is my public page. I do a lot of tweeting. I do microblogging on Twitter, so that's where I'm trying to curate most of my information out to people. And I do have that feeding into my other social media sites, or FeliciaStoller.com is my website.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest today, Dr. Felicia, and thank you, listeners, for joining us once again for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse. And until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, wishing that you stay healthy.